Welcome back to another episode of Vanguard Radio. I'm your host, J. Richard Jones. Today we're going to revisit a topic. It's really related to the technical challenges that the Army faces with digitization. We're going to have an update, but we're also going to explore what's new and what the future holds. Joining me today are two very special guests that we have. First of all, I'd like to introduce you to Al-Karim Amlani, who is the Director of Cyber Programs with General Dynamics Mission Systems Canada, and as well, Victor Ku, who is Chief Engineer, Land C4ISR Programs, also with General Dynamics Mission Systems Canada. Now, before the show, I asked both of these gentlemen to tell me, if you had to leave in one sentence, what would you like our readers and listenership to understand about what's going on with digitization, some of the challenges, and some of the innovation? And the two answers that came back is, industry is organically modernizing to solve the issues at hand for Army digitization. And as well, the CAF digitizations process needs to remember that the goal is to enable the war fighter and not to get too lost in the technology. It's there to support the fighter. Gentlemen, welcome back to Vanguard Radio. And I guess, Al-Karim, welcome, because this is your first time on the show.
Yes, thank you very much, John.
So, Victor, why don't we begin with you? Last year, we had you on the podcast to talk about some of the technical challenges with Army digitization. What's changed over the past year? Have you seen any progress on addressing those challenges?
Yeah, first off, thanks a lot for having me back again. I'm pretty excited to be back on the podcast. But to quickly recap the conversation we had last year, as you mentioned, I focused on the technical challenges of digitization, and I talked about the data space. And what I described was a world where the procurement of data-rich sensors are increasing exponentially in a very short amount of time. Looking at the problem from a data-centric point of view, there were three main areas I concentrated on, which was data consolidation, data distribution, and data contextualization. And really that was talking about the flow of how the information is analyzed and scrubbed, sent to where it is needed, and not to overload the end user by presenting the essential information needed for decision making. For the data distribution and contextualization piece, this is where I introduced General Dynamics TNAS, or Tactical Networks as a Service, of how we have approached these areas. Then I described that the TNAS are really a set of services set up like Lego blocks that can be upgraded and swapped out over time as technologies and products mature. So you asked me two questions, and I'll start with the second one first, which is, have we seen any progress on addressing these challenges I just mentioned? I'd say yes, absolutely. We've seen a lot of progress as GD hasn't stopped innovating through our own IRAD and hosting industry hackathon events as really a low risk way to prove out technologies. More specifically, for the data consolidation challenge, we've focused efforts in collaborating with industry partners and experts on the latest in data fusion techniques to address this problem space, creating digital twins and creating AI algorithms to help perform the analysis. For the distribution and contextualization portion, we've really further refined our TNAS offering by really creating the Lego blocks of the future to support adaptive network algorithms, various cloud providers, battle management applications, and new bears. And I'll get back to kind of your first question when you said, what has changed over the past year besides the progress we've made? Since we last spoke, I would say reflectively, the operational urgency has significantly increased due to conflicts that are happening in real time. With this urgency, I would say came a validation that both GD and industry is on the right track in our approach to address factors such as resiliency and survivability, which really has emerged as key considerations of any solution that is deployed.
So when you're looking at land C4ISR modernization programs, how is General Dynamics drawing on previous CAF program experience to bring forward new ideas and solutions?
Yeah, I think, there's three different ways that I'd like to probably discuss in this area. The first one is innovation with industry partners, whether they're big or small. The second is really implementing and looking at the quick feedback cycle that it's possible with the end user. And the third is really being smart about how we package capability to the Canadian Armed Forces for easy consumption. So the first portion I highlighted was innovation with industry partners. As I alluded to earlier, GD hasn't stopped innovating in this space, but like the old adage goes, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go further, go together. So there are many technology companies, both big and small, that have excellent expertise and products to offer. Working with these companies, I think what GD makes a great fit with these companies is we can adapt the technology in the Canadian Armed Forces context. And that context is really important, so we can evaluate the applicability of these technologies and products. So some of the example questions that we would ask is, how does this progress interoperability with their adjoining coalition partners? Are these technologies adaptable to operation as operations evolve, as we observe moving from a centralized to a dispersed mode of operations? What type of richness of services and capabilities can an end user really expect from an enterprise to the tactical edge? And as we talked about, like artificial intelligence, machine learning, or cloud, industry is organically mobilizing to bring these new ideas to the table. The second aspect is the quick feedback cycle with the end user. At GD, we've always taken a user-centered approach to our solution offering. However, we haven't always had the opportunity to validate our solutions in a timely manner with an end-user community. I see this dynamic changing moving forward and look to the recent successes at 2CMBG as a possible model moving forward. You see, at 2CMBG, they are a highly engaged team based in Petawawa, where they recently embarked on a journey trialing out new technologies to solve their operational need to a more dispersed model versus centralized mode of operations. Several industry partners, including GD, showed up in full force. We're able to help integrate many of these technologies focused on their operations. It was almost like a startup company type feel, to be honest, where we had the technical folks from both GD and 2CMBG work side by side, developing and iterating solutions in real time, with the end user feedback being instantaneous, essentially building the new Lego blocks, if you will, that the CAF will be able to use in the future. Moving forward, these end user engagements are invaluable, and they're so useful to ensure that solutions that are built meet the need. And when end users are involved, right from the beginning, it actually reduces the training burden and increases user acceptance at the end of the day, since they are invested throughout the whole process.
You're getting real-time feedback too, right?
Yeah, we are getting real-time feedback. So we develop solutions and they give us feedback and we iterate. That design process is so, so quick. The last concept I mentioned was how we package for easy consumption to the CAF. You know, last year, you know, I like analogies. Last year, I used Lego. This year, I'll use sort of the retail storefront analogy. And so when you walk up into a retail store, you know, you have kind of two sets of mind, right? You may be under a tight timeline, focused on the job, and you don't want a lot of fuss, and you want to just buy something out of the box. For this use case, you look to kind of a prepackaged solution. So whether you're in a grocery store, you have these prepackaged meals, or an all-in-one computer type thing at a big box retailer. Maybe the second use case is, let's say you have some new hardware or tech that you see and you want to use. For this use case, you'd want some more customizability, some flexibility for you to pick and choose these specialty items without you needing to worry about the basic core functionality. If we relate this back to the GD TNAS concept, it really comes with essential made in Canada hardware and software items already and services that is really core to the tactical network from HQ down to mobile. So using this as a base, we can offer pre-canned solutions to meet a specific mission, or a more customized solution if a unit wants to use a specific application for, say, battle planning or a specific bear. So by giving different options, some out of the box, some more customized, really it is offering more choice to the end users so they can be more effective at their job.
Yeah, scalability is important. Alkarim, from your perspective, what are some of the key considerations when bringing CAF infrastructure to the cloud?
So thanks, John, also for having me on Vanguard's podcast today. And that's a great question. It's something I'm quite passionate about, and I appreciate the opportunity to have a platform to talk about it. It's a topic that I just recently actually addressed in a blog post for the Canadian Chamber of Commerce's Cyber.Right campaign. Before I kind of jump in and give a bit of a detailed answer, I just want to set the stage, and you kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, by saying that the warfighter uses C2 applications and workloads. That's what they usually do on a day-to-day basis. And cloud, from our perspective, is really an enabler to these workloads. So I want to start by saying that, you know, while cloud migrations are complex, the Canadian Armed Forces or the CAF's migration to a cloud platform is not going to be a typical migration. This is due to a concept that we've coined, you know, internally, enterprise to the tactical edge, where high bandwidth, reliable, available connections, some of which could traverse into contested cyberspace, are not there all the time. So another consideration would really be around technologies. Because of the range of technologies that are currently deployed by D&D, interoperability of capability is going to be one of the key considerations. So this cloud, this secret cloud, will need to be able to add and remove mission-centric technologies as innovations advance, as mission priorities evolve, and obsolete capabilities are phased out. Because the cloud is also going to house some very sensitive data critical to national security, a secret level cloud is required, and with users at varying security levels, a multi-level security component is going to be required. This is table stakes, and one I know that many companies, including us at GDMS Canada, know how to address. Add to this, and Victor talked a little bit about this earlier, add to this the concept of data-centric security within the cloud. Once again, many cloud providers provide out-of-the-box capability to address things like data-centric security. For us at GDMS Canada, being a cloud agnostic capability provider, this capability is a service that we would just inherit from any sort of a cloud deployment. But there is an angle which I feel gets overlooked when we talk about cloud deployment into the CAF, and that's how the data within the cloud is used. GDMS Canada has learned through our decades-long interaction with end users in the CAF that warfighters do not just access the data, they actively use the data in support of mission operations. So what does this mean for a deployment of a secret cloud? So it means that, you know, while storing and tagging and securing the data within the cloud platform is critical, it's equally important to design how the existing and yet to be developed command and control or C2 workloads will search and present the stored data to the warfighter. It means that the C2 workloads must respect the required security classification levels. It means the C2 workloads that are running on the secret cloud need to understand and respect how the mission-centric operational data will be triaged, will be throttled, will be prioritized, and deliver to the warfighter over a disconnected, intermittent, and latent network. Everyone needs to remember that we are enabling soldiers and not IT administrators. It's a key point. It's also important to consider, once a cloud or a secret cloud is being deployed, that the cyber attack surface has shifted on us once we unleash the power of AI, artificial intelligence, and machine learning onto the cloud stored data set. So as we enable new C2 workloads to support things like JADC2, we need to assure ourselves that we have trust in the underlying AI model in the same way that we currently address zero-day and supply chain vulnerabilities on the risk profiles of our networks. So just to kind of conclude this thought, I just want to tie this together with some 5 summarized points. So first of all, no doubt, the deployment of a hyperscale cloud is going to create some significant growth in processing power for CAF digitization and for things like JADC2. Number 2, AI and ML will further push the envelope to unleash further horsepower, but will create a renewed focus on cybersecurity risk mitigation on an emerging attack surface, which is really the underlying AI ML model. Number three, these two elements in my mind are really just enablers for new C2 workloads that are going to be used by the warfighter. Number four, any secret cloud deployment by the CAF and or any proof of concept, in my opinion, should really not overlook how the C2 workloads will adapt to this new infrastructure. And number five, one should always remember that end users do not just access the data from the cloud, they actually use workloads or applications.
Those are all great points. And I think that cloud for the Department of Defense has some complicated issues, you know, and it does require that kind of thinking. But I'm also getting a strong sense that you have to be able to apply that data in a real-time way.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And you know, Victor talked about it a little bit earlier, right? You know, engaging the end users, really understanding how the end users are going to apply it in the context of a mission. And that's really where the rubber hits the road.
Yeah. And I think feedback in real time helps to eliminate a lot of the bugs early on and really fine tune the process. Alkarim, with the release of the CAF digital strategy, what are some of the key factors that need to be considered in order to make that a reality?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've got sort of four sort of suggestions. The first one is really experimentation with some emerging technologies. So that's a willingness by industry and government to collaboratively experiment with new technologies and a commitment to some continuous learning. The second factor would be investment in technology and infrastructure. So the CAF, you know, I'm recommending that the CAF invest in new technologies and infrastructure to support digital transformation. This would include things like updating the legacy systems, investing in cloud computing and data analytics, developing secure networks and communication channels. Emerging capital programs that are being published, such as JDHQ SRM and ITI Support or C2, are really excellent starting points for the CAF from my perspective. Access to the latest technologies, tools, and expertise through active collaboration between industry partners, academic institutions, and D&D. This would include things like engaging in research and development partnerships, participating in technology incubators and accelerators, and leveraging open innovation platforms to tap into a broader range of ideas and perspectives. And finally, it's about incentivizing the formation of industry partnerships within procurement vehicles to enable the merging of best practices from the existing defense industrial base and from traditional IT companies, particularly in creating a Canadian sovereign solution, which is built in Canada by Canadians for Canadians.
Yeah, that's important too. I imagine that you and your team are in full swing for CANSEC planning at this point. I'd like to ask each of you just for a quick comment. Can you give us any insight on what to expect from the General Dynamics booth this year? I guess we'll start with you, Victor. We'll give you a break, Alkarim.
Sure. If we go back maybe a short 15 minutes into the past, I started off the show with some of the challenges we outlined last year and some of the things we've been working on to address those challenges. In some respects, some of the technical concepts I described seemed far into the future, yet the need is really now. I guess my message for CANSEC is, you know, we're going to show how industry has been mobilizing and collaborating, and we want to demonstrate all the neat things that we've done in the past year to address a lot of those challenges at CANSEC in particular. So I'll break it out probably into two different segments. What are the key themes that we've concentrated at CANSEC, and what should people expect to see at CANSEC? So first of all, the key themes, there are three main themes going into from a GD perspective. The first one is engage anywhere, anytime. The second one is JADC2 as a service. And the third theme is always ready. So the first theme, engage anywhere, anytime, that's really focusing in on providing a continuity of services from JDHQ all the way down to the dismounted soldier. Underpinning that would be GD's tactical networks as a service, which spans from the cloud down to an individual soldier. JADC2 as a service, which is the second theme. So like tactical networks as a service, this concept builds upon the everything as a service model to provide flexibility to the Canadian Armed Forces. That focuses on survivability, resiliency, high availability, and pace for communications and processing. And the last theme that I'd like to discuss, it's really this always ready paradigm. What it means to GD Mission Systems Canada is train as you fight, really. That's the phrase that we're looking at, where these systems will always be available to units to offer continuous training opportunities. That's a lot of great benefit because that reduces the possibility of skill fade. So when you bring it all together, how does this get realized at CANSEC? What should people expect to actually see? To wrap it all up into something folks can feel and touch and drop on their foot, we're going to have a demonstration like we did last year out back, which was really, you know, that message and that demonstration really resonated with observers. Last year, we did an Army-focused sensor-to-shooter scenario. And this year, we're expanding that scope, demonstrating a joint pan-domain C2 operations capability using a joint air drone artillery strike scenario. I think at the end, though, just to wrap it up there, is it kind of really showcases GDMS's capability as an integrator and innovator, bringing together 8 different companies featuring many Canadian SMBs in a cohesive manner, and offers an approach to de-risk SSE 42 modernization projects.
Wow, it sounds like there's going to be a lot at your booth. Alkarim, do you have anything to add as well?
Yeah, just to add to what Victor talked about and the whole concept of cyber defense. And last year, we did have a bit of a showing on some of the capability we were providing when it comes to cyber defense. And you know, we're going to showcase, you know, what we're doing in terms of overlaying onto our solution, you know, and enabling the CAF from a cyber defense perspective. So there'll be some demos and some discussion around cyber defense and how we bake it in from day one.
Well, it sounds like there's going to be an awful lot of good things to see this year at the show. You've been listening to Vanguard Radio, and we've been talking about the challenges with digitization for the Army. We've talked about areas to improve modernization. We've also talked about how to make it real and the need to enable the warfighter and not just get lost in the technology. I'd like to thank our special guests today, Alkarim Amlani, who is the Director of Cyber Programs with General Dynamics Mission Systems Canada, and also Victor Koo, who is Chief Engineer, Land C4ISR Programs, also with General Dynamics Mission Systems Canada. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
The views, information, or opinions expressed during the Vanguard Weekly Podcast Series, CGE Weekly Podcast Series, Vanguard Radio Podcast, and CGE Radio Podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not represent those of Vanguard or any affiliated media products, their employees, or owners. Vanguard Magazine, Canadian Government Executive Magazine, and its affiliates are not responsible for and do not verify for accuracy any of the information contained in this podcast series. This podcast may not be copied or distributed without express written approval of Promotive Communications, Inc., PCI. You may not edit, modify, or redistribute this podcast without consent from PCI. PCI assumes no liability for activities in connection with this podcast or for use of this podcast with any other website, computer, or playing device.